Well, good afternoon on the East Coast and morning everywhere else in the U.S. I just letting a few people get in to the room. This is Brandon Gehr with our usual Friday webinar that I learned today was actually the idea of Miss Kristen Hobbs. So thank you, Kristen, and Laura Lee and the SAC team for finding a way to make sure that we stayed engaged throughout this whole COVID cycle process or whatever we want, pandemic, whatever the terminology is for this length of time. Looking forward to today's topic on essentially kidney care in you. I just wanted to do a few, well, I'll let Kristen later explain some housekeeping announcements. We want to make sure that you know about our National Annual Summit on Health Disparities that's going to take place at the last Monday and Tuesday of April, which will feature folks like they're here on the panel, including Dr. Hall and Kristen. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Laura Lee Hall with SHC.
Thank you so very much, Brandon. I have a few introductory slides that are mainly just to kind of set the stage before the experts here lead the way. So we're calling this overall initiative Championing Total Health, the Role of Flu and COVID Vaccines. I really want to thank people who make this possible. It's very important, and it really, there are so many folks who contribute. First, our distinguished panelist, who Kristen will introduce. We thank you for your expertise, your passion, your generosity. I think we want to shout out to our partners at Volt Lab. They're a communication firm that does so much work with us. And so Kellyanne Collins and Caitlin Eichelberger have been especially helpful in this activity, and our thanks to you. We are funded by the CDC and Santa Fe Pasteur for our COVID and flu vaccine work. So we're very grateful that for that support, which makes activities like these possible. I needed to give a really big shout out to Kristen Hobbs, who is on the SHC staff. She really is the mastermind of the activity and has led so many fantastic efforts in our program to promote health equity in every zip code. So thank you, Kristen. And for the audience today, you are actually the panelist as well as the audience. So we look forward to your engagement and appreciate you very much. So what's the backdrop here? It's all about overall health and well-being. So I have some points here. Racial and ethnic disparities pervade many aspects of health and well-being. Can't just focus on vaccination. That's what we've heard time and time again as we've worked in communities of color. There are many things that people are concerned about, and they really want to see attention to the host of health issues and ways to promote health that are valuable to them and so needed. But however, COVID and flu can pose increased and complex risks to people of color with chronic illnesses and health concerns. In fact, I don't think it's often realized by many of us. So this program is seeking to empower communities of color with information about vaccines and common health challenges to help them promote their health, their total health. So the Championing Total Health program, here's kind of the who, what, how, and when. Who, we're partnering with AIM and REACH and other society members, patient and provider groups to create this resource. What is this resource? It's basically gonna be, the mothership is gonna be a microsite, which will inform all of our communication resources and training activities, and hopefully yours. So the information that we put together and put on a website will be part of our communication tools, the Health Champion resources, as well as part of the training materials for our DRIVE clinical teams, Faith Health Alliance members, Hair Wellness Warriors, and Community Pharmacist Ambassadors. And so how? We're doing it with input from people like you, patients, clinicians, family members, experts, community leaders. And we're going to march through the year of 2022, focusing on the topics I've listed here below, using the monthly webinar as a key information gathering opportunity. So chronic kidney disease, maternal health, cancer, healthy nutrition and physical activity, especially as it relates to obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, lung diseases, aging, and HIV/AIDS. You will see the topics of the microsite, so I'm going to go right past this. And we look forward to hearing from you. Kristen will guide you in providing input today. I'm certainly interested in other health topics and seeing what's missing or what you would recommend. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kristen, and thank you all once again.
Thank you so much, Laura Lee. And I just want to thank everyone for joining us today. I am going to share my screen so that we can walk through our presentation and then get to the interactive portion. So this webinar series was really built so that we could focus on total health and not only vaccines, but the intersection of both of them, as Laura Lee has mentioned. So I'll be your moderator today. I'm Senior Project Manager of Quality Improvement and Equity at NMQF and SHC. And this was a brainchild of our Health Champions program at NMQF-SHC, but also really fleshed out through the CoLab and through Dr. Laura Lee Hall's really, really invaluable direction. So I appreciate everyone who made this come to fruition. We are partnering with AIM and iReach and the National Kidney Foundation of Michigan for this particular webinar for National Kidney Month. So as Laura Lee mentioned, we will be building first a microsite for each of the sort of total health issues and conditions at the intersection of vaccinations. One example of that that we have here is our atrial fibrillation toolkit. It is also a microsite, which is a one-page website embedded within another website, and it has detailed information from top to bottom about AFib. That's what we want to do with every single one of the total health focuses that we have at the intersection of vaccination. So this microsite will be incredibly detailed, and we hope to have it culturally responsive, linguistically appropriate, and important for individuals living with chronic kidney disease. It will then seek to inform the basis for the infographics that we develop, any social media graphics, any flyers, and et cetera, any materials that you can disseminate to communities, to patients, to clinicians. So a little bit of housekeeping, so everyone's in listen-only mode and your videos are turned off. I ask that you place all your questions to the panel in the Q&A box, because we will engage in some respectful communication and commentary in the chat box, as well as we'd like for you to answer some of our open-ended polling questions in the chat box as well. If you don't have transcription turned on, you can do that at the bottom of your screen. And this is meant to be interactive. So if you have a comment as we go along through the webinar, please put it in the chat. And certainly we welcome transparent and honest feedback. We want to make sure this is equitable for everyone. So please, please engage in that as well. So I'll quickly talk about NMQF and SHC. I'll give an introduction to chronic kidney disease in people of color, and then I'll pass it over to one of my dear CoLab members, and now I consider to be one of my professional friends, Dr. Bisolo, to talk about vaccines and vaccination data and the ACIP recommendations. I will introduce our panel so that they can give you a little bit of their background, and then we'll have the feedback for the microsite. It will be in the form of an outline for today. This is our first iteration of this series, so we want to make sure that we're getting it right. So we've constructed an outline for you to give us feedback on that will help develop the actual microsite. So NMQF was started by Dr. Gary Puckrin in 1998, really to use data to address health disparities. It's the crux of what we do. And here at SHC, we use that data to build sustainable, healthy communities in every single zip code. We prioritize communities of color, but we really do focus on all communities that have been historically excluded from quality healthcare narratives. And so we do that through quality improvement in clinical education via a lens of health equity. You have met Dr. Laura Lee Hall, who is our president and gracious leader. You know me now. And we do have another colleague. Her name is Chinny. She is Quality Improvement and Equity Project Manager. So chronic kidney disease, what is it? It is when the kidneys are damaged to a point that they cannot filter blood the way that they normally should. Risk factors for developing kidney disease, these are a lot of the comorbidities that we see people already have before they get to the development of kidney disease, is diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, and a family history of kidney failure. How can one manage chronic kidney disease? So, of course, working with your physician to have a really good treatment plan in controlling diabetes and blood pressure, also engaging in healthy habits, and of course, receiving all your adult and routine vaccinations, which is why we're here. So let's talk about kidney disease at the intersection of race and ethnicity. As you may have already guessed, people of color are at higher risk for developing kidney failure. There is an increased prevalence of diabetes and high blood pressure in communities of color. Specifically, Black patients are 4 times more likely to develop kidney failure. Hispanic patients are 1.3 times more likely, and Indigenous Americans are 1.2 times more likely to develop kidney failure, which is striking and why we're here and want to make sure that we can provide education and information for everyone to be protected against vaccine-preventable diseases that won't lead to further complications. So what are those infectious disease implications? Patients who are living with kidney disease and are infected with COVID-19 are at higher risk for hospitalization and or mortality. Patients on dialysis and patients who have had kidney transplants have weakened immune systems, and it's harder for them to fight these infections. Even patients who do not have a previous history of kidney disease are at risk for acute kidney injury or acute renal failure if they contract COVID-19. And we know the data has proven that COVID-19 vaccines and boosters are our best defense for risk mitigation measures. And we see those same disease implications with flu. Patients living with kidney disease are at higher risk for complications. Patients on dialysis and who've had kidney transplant really, really have a higher risk because of their weakened immune system, because of taking anti-rejection meds. And then we know that flu vaccine has shown over decades, has shown to reduce the risk of really getting sick with flu and or having major complications. So right now, I want to turn it over to Dr. Bisolo, who has 20 plus years of experience as a pediatrician, an urgent care physician, and as a public health expert and vaccination expert. Welcome, Dr. Bisolo.
Thank you so much, Kristen. And I just want to say a welcome to all of you. And thank you so much to our hosts, Kristen and Dr. Lauren Lee from MMQF, AIM, and to all of the REACH grantees who are on. As Kristen mentioned, I've worked in the Immunization Services Division at CDC, training healthcare providers and the public on the importance of vaccinating both children and adults. But I've been really privileged the last 2 years to work with an organization at AIM called the REACH program, where we're promoting COVID-19 and flu vaccination in our African-American, Hispanic, American Indian, and Asian communities. Through this work, I've had a lot of learning from the various communities about thoughts about vaccination, beliefs, concerns, and we've addressed some of the information that may need correction. So I truly do understand that in order to make an impact in our communities, we must ensure that we start from a level playing field, one where we're including our community in our education efforts and ensuring that we share what knowledge we do have about vaccines in a manner that everyone can understand and then pass along to their peers. So with that, we'll go on to the next slide. When we look at where we are at this stage in the pandemic, Kristen has already laid out the foundation, letting us know that COVID vaccines do work. They help, especially when you're up to date. We're seeing, as we've seen in prior years with flu vaccine, what this slide is trying to show us is that by race, we are still seeing disparities in COVID-19 vaccination rates. We see that we have a lot of work to do in our communities. Our African-American, Hispanic communities, we're lagging behind our Asian and white counterparts. And similar, we've seen with flu vaccine for decades. When we look at just booster doses in the African-American population, 43.6% of those who are eligible for a COVID-19 booster dose have received one, but 56% have not. In the Hispanic population, 40% who are eligible have received, 60% have not. So we still have a ways to go because it's so important to stay up to date. 2 doses, unfortunately, of the Pfizer Moderna doesn't cut it anymore. We do need our booster doses. And on this slide, as I mentioned, flu vaccine, we see that again, we see those disparities by race. And this has been for decades now. Unfortunately, what can we do in our communities to try to narrow this gap between vaccination rates in our Black and Hispanic populations and our white counterparts? What can we learn from this pandemic that can carry us forward so we can narrow this gap with flu vaccination as well? When we talk about COVID-19 vaccines specifically for people who are moderately immunocompromised or severely or have chronic kidney disease, let's just start from the basics. There are, as you know, three vaccines currently authorized or approved for use in the U.S. Two of them are the mRNA vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, and then the J&J vaccine. Currently, because of the concern of the risk of a rare but serious blood clot in some people who receive the J&J vaccine, CDC now recommends that the mRNA vaccines, which are the Pfizer and Moderna, be preferred. Those are recommended first before someone gets a J&J vaccine. So what does that mean for people who are immunocompromised, either because of their underlying illness or, say, medications they take for their illness? For example, someone with chronic kidney disease who's on a medication that may suppress their immune system, or someone on dialysis whose immune system is lower. Studies have shown that unlike everyone who does not have these same conditions, those with chronic kidney disease need an additional dose of COVID-19 vaccine in what's called their primary series. So instead of two doses like everyone else, it's recommended that three doses be given. The third dose is something we call an additional dose. An additional dose to help boost your immune system, give an additional protection. So if you're on dialysis or have chronic kidney disease or other chronic medical problems, immunocompromised, you would get three doses, say of Pfizer or Moderna, a month apart. That's your primary series. That is to give you that initial baseline protection. But it may not be enough long-term. So we all need a booster dose. Those of us in the general population who may not be immunocompromised, we get our booster dose 5 months after our primary series. However, what this table is trying to clearly lay out is that if you're immunocompromised or have chronic kidney disease, your booster dose should come 3 months after that third additional dose. So in total, you're getting four doses. And we want to highlight this because unfortunately, many people in our communities are not aware of the necessity of getting first three doses if you're immunocompromised and then a booster dose, making it a total of four doses. So we wanted to share that. There are some nuances that I won't go into. For example, if you started with a J&J vaccine, how many doses? But we can talk if you have any specific questions. The CDC and National Kidney Foundation have put very nice tables out on this. So again, for flu vaccination, we recommend it as the best protection against the flu. Want to remind everyone that the nasal spray, which is a live but weakened version of the flu vaccine, is not recommended for people who are immunocompromised. You should only be getting your shot. When we give flu vaccination, we see a reduced number of flu cases. We also want to highlight that there are other vaccines, that the pneumococcal vaccine, that prevents against bacterial pneumonia. You hear a lot about people getting pneumonia, especially during flu season. There are now newer vaccines out called PCV15, PCV20, that offer even further protection against pneumonia. Then there's your tetanus booster. You should be getting that every 10 years to protect you against tetanus. And there's hepatitis B, hepatitis A. Make sure you're up to date on all your vaccines to really protect you. And so just going back to the flu, the routine annual vaccination is recommended for everyone 6 months and older. So speak with your healthcare provider if you have any questions about flu, COVID-19, pneumococcal, any vaccines, and we're here to answer your questions as well. Thank you so much, Kristen.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dr. Vaisala. That was beautiful. Thank you so much for going through all of those nuances for our audience. I know that it can be very difficult to wade through all of those specific details. So I want to introduce our other two panelists that have joined us today, Ms. Cynthia Nichols-Jackson, who is patient and program coordinator of the National Kidney Foundation of Michigan, who is also a kidney transplant survivor as well. And Dr. Silas Norman, who's Associate Professor of Nephrology and Nephrologist at University of Michigan. Welcome to the both of you, and I'll give you an opportunity to introduce yourselves to all of our audience and really talk about your background and your relationship to kidney disease and the intersection of vaccinations. Ms. Cynthia, I think you can go first. Did we lose her? I thought she was on. Until we get her back. Dr. Norman, did you want to start?
Sure, I'm happy to. Good afternoon, everyone. Happy to be here. So as mentioned, I am a transplant nephrologist at an academic medical center. So I'm a medical kidney transplant physician. And so in that capacity, I have the opportunity to take care of folks with advanced chronic kidney disease, folks on dialysis, folks waiting for a kidney transplant, and then after kidney transplantation. And so this is, I think, a terrific and timely topic. My interest as we think about this is that we have a population, as mentioned, that's at higher risk for infection, hospitalization, and death from COVID, but also from other infections. And one of the things that we really try to do in the kidney transplant space, because people wait a long time for transplants and they're really transformative, is we want people to be as healthy as possible. One of the ways to do that is we try to make sure that people don't get any infections or illnesses that we can otherwise prevent. And this is where vaccination becomes so important, because we are fortunate to have these medical advances where we can offer protection to a number of infections to our patients. So very, very passionate about that. And just our ability to reach out and help deliver to patients the best potential care that we have available for them. So happy to be here this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Dr. Norman. And I hope I was able to do the introduction of chronic kidney disease some justice and really talk about the disease in people of color. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that conversation? Anything that you think our audience needs to know today?
No, thank you. So I thought you did a fantastic introduction. That was great and hit the high points. I think one of the things I would hope to communicate today is that we can really be our own best health advocate. If we can arm ourselves with good information, we can really make sure that we stay as healthy as possible. You showed some of those stats. So I think as we talk today, I think this is one of those forums where we get the good information out to people so that we can all be healthier.
I agree. Thank you so much for joining us. Hi, Ms. Cynthia. How are you?
I'm good.
It's so good to see you.
Again, as I will say the same as Dr. Norman, you did a great introduction. So I thank you so much giving a number of his comments I mimic, because it is very, very important for us as kidney patients to stay very healthy as much as possible, because this is a very turbulent time, and all these vaccines and different protection items that are out here for us, we need to take heed to those.
Absolutely. And can you talk about your patient experience and really getting vaccinated? What did that look like for you, and how has it really helped change the way that you think about, mitigating risk, especially in a pandemic?
Well, as a kidney patient, I have, pardon me one second. So as a kidney patient, it's been a journey, if I can say the least. The dialysis is very challenging, but yet is, you're so immunocompromised. So in my, I will represent both the dialysis patient as well as the transplant patients. and know that the vaccine is our only protection at this given time. For this virus is much more of a battle, an army, than we've ever had to deal with in our lives as even normal, healthy people. But those of us who are immunocompromised have had to be very careful of our various just regular bacteria that are in the air, with other diseases that come through as far as the flu, other challenges, you know. So we know that the vaccine has been designed. However, it was put out in some delays there, but it was definitely designed for us as immunocompromised. It is very much that I decided that I'm a new transplant and I'm doing everything possible to keep my organ. So with that said, yes, I stepped up, took the vaccine, I took the Moderna. I knew that it would take, it was gonna be a guess. Am I gonna be affected by the side effects? No matter. I didn't have any side effects from it. Had a sore arm and that was all. When it was time to get the second dose, I was right there, took the picture to show other people, yes, get this vaccine. This is our army. We need to build up our army. We need some more ammunition, because what we're working with here is definitely not the common bacteria or virus. When it came time then, when they changed and said, well, those of us who have had solid organ transplants may still not be as covered as should be. And they stated that we need to get a third dose. I stepped up and I was like, okay, we gotta do anything possible to stay in this life. It's already that you had a challenge and your life has changed now totally, because you don't have an organ that is fighting for you totally in your body and life. So your lifestyle's already changed. So do everything possible. When they came and told us about the booster, the same thing. Got out there. I am working with the public. I do public talks. I talk about to other kidney patients that you need to work on anything possible to protect yourself. So those were my actions and how I dealt with the vaccine itself.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. So now we're going to move to the interactive portion of our webinar. I am going to first share with you the outline that we envision for the information that will be funneled into the microsite, right? Remember, the microsite would be the one-page website embedded in another, and that embedding will go on likely our Health Champions Toolkit website. So let me share my screen for that. And then after I go through it, then we'll invite your feedback. Alrighty, so first things first is when we're talking about championing total health, we really want to make sure that we have all of the equitable frameworks at top of mind. How do we ensure, and let me make this a little bit bigger so that everyone can see, how do we ensure a culturally representative and appropriate set of materials that is linguistically appropriate and able to be disseminated to all audiences? We don't want to create disparities while trying to combat them. And then we'll talk a lot about chronic kidney disease in people of color. So the epidemiology of disparities, the causes of CKD. We talked a little bit about those overlapping comorbidities that often exist, but we'll go into deeper detail on the microsite, prevention and treatment approaches on the continuum of care. And then we want to make sure we're linking to really good resources. So resources from the National Kidney Foundation of Michigan, additional resources, if you have them, please, please put those in the chat once we get there. And then vaccinations and CKD, and these can be flipped. We can do COVID-19 first, we can do flu first, whatever you guys think is more beneficial to kidney patients, to patients who have had a kidney transplant, or any the general public. We'll talk through flu vaccination and CKD. Patients, you know, with CKD may have poor health outcomes, implications for receiving transplants, dialysis, also the impact of COVID-19 and flu on the social determinants of health, and how that plays a vital role in, you know, making sure that people get vaccinated. And then we'll do the same thing for COVID-19 and really infusing or integrating, if you will, the ACIP recommendations and making sure, I think Dr. Biasolo alluded to that there are several charts. That one chart that we showed was just one, but there are several charts and tables and graphs, and we'll work with, you know, internally with our team, with Dr. Lorelei Hall and Bolt Lab to make sure that we have all of the relevant charts and graphs and information that you need. And then obviously having the patient and caregiver perspective. So optimizing access to needed care and quality of life if you or someone you love has CKD. So really that social support, what does that look like for you and how does that help you manage your health outcomes? Brief videos for patients from patients who have been living with kidney disease. So we already have from our partners at National Kidney Foundation of Michigan, a video from their kidney conversations, Ms. Dieta McKinney, recorded her journey and path as a caregiver and why that made her move from vaccine hesitancy to vaccine confidence. And then a day in the life. Ms. Cynthia is going to provide us with some more details about just a day in the life. What's it like navigating a world where you have to take millions of risk mitigation measures to really lower your risk of contracting a vaccine-preventable disease, and then some additional resources and links. So with that, I'll ask Keiko to populate our first question. And panelists, please feel free to answer any of the questions you have the ability. So who would you share this microsite with? Is it just colleagues, do you think, or all of these people listed, including, you know, on social media platforms? And we'll give everyone a few minutes to respond and go through some of the answers. Just as a reminder, please put your questions in the Q&A box instead of the chat. I think we have a majority of people who've answered, so we can go ahead and share the results. So a lot of people said family and friends, colleagues, patients. Less people said social media audience, and that may be, you know, the microsite, just the format and so much information, which is why we want to use it to inform things like infographics, things that can be shared on social media and in other situations. All right, next question. Is there vital information missing from the outline that should certainly be included on the microsite? So please enter your answers to this one in the chat. Dr. Lorelei Hall will help me manage those. But really, you know, going through the outline, did you notice anything offhand that it was like, okay, we never addressed this, so this needs to be included? And please feel free to be transparent and honest. I think one of our audience members had a question that can also be used to address something on the microsite. So do you think historical environmental traumas and harms on communities of color, particularly African Americans, impacts increase in health issues, diseases? I think we can really take a deep dive into mistrust of the medical and public health systems on the micro site as well. And we'll also ask that question during our Q&A. So thank you. Okay, we've got all other vaccines. Language that works to improve vaccine acceptance. Absolutely. The importance and benefits of booster vaccinations for COVID long hauler. Yeah. That may be, there may be implications for a COVID, the intersection of being like a COVID long hauler and having chronic kidney disease as well. So thank you for that. I don't see any more coming in, so we can move on to the next question. So what challenges from vaccine preventable diseases exist for patients living with kidney disease? Any challenges that you may have seen as a patient or a caregiver or a clinician or provider? And this may come in the form of access to the healthcare system, when we're talking about, you know, getting vaccinations for those vaccine preventable diseases, or social or political systemic determinants of health, however you would like to answer that question. Thank you, Dr. Norman. Access to healthcare, good information about benefits and risks. Dr. Biasello says fear of disease and risk of disease impacts. Mental well-being, mental health is vitally important these days. Well, always, but really the pandemic has had a huge impact on it. Vaccine helps to provide some level of confidence, yeah. And folks have asked what effect the vaccine may have on the kidney and other organs. I want to table that because I think we can have a question for Dr. Norman during the Q&A session. Chronic dry hacking cough and fatigue. Oh, wow. That's a good one. Looking at the impact of insurance coverage and economic cost burden for patient populations. Absolutely. We now know that those who are not insured or underinsured are not going to be able to get their COVID tests and treatment for free starting, I think, sometime in April. I can't remember the exact date. So that has larger implications. Low literacy information, clarity on treatment options for individuals living with CKD, limited access to treatment options, vaccine hesitancy, absolutely. This is fantastic. Thank you guys so much. Just know that once we, you know, download the recording for this, we will be able to download the chat. So we're not losing any of this information. Information provided for people with low literacy. Got it. Good. Okay. I think we hit a stopping point for that question. I think we can go to the next one. Okay, so in light of the decrease in mask mandates across the U.S., what are some risk mitigation strategies that we can employ to assist in reducing severe risk, especially for communities living with chronic medical conditions? So what are you still doing, or what do you recommend to continue doing, even though mandates are laxing, if you will, across the U.S.? Hand washing and sanitizing, proof of vax status, keep wearing masks, do more outdoor events, encouraging continuing masking and social distancing, continue to mask in public indoor places, still trying to keep my distance and sanitizing, continue to wear masks for indoor activities and crowded outdoor events, social distancing. Everybody's saying keep wearing masks. That's my rule. We just put the mask on. It never comes off. Continuing to follow CDC guidelines. Always providing masks in public areas. You know, I think that's really, you know, how do we, if we're going to tell people to continue wearing masks, we need to provide public indoor spaces. We need to provide them for free as well. And I think, you know, knowing that N95 and KN95 and KN94 masks are more effective against certain variants is vitally important because not everyone has access to those type of masks as well. Test if you have symptoms. Don't wait until you're sick. Test early. Absolutely. Continue to encourage boosters. Always wear mask. Having a mask for whoever's around me. I like that one. If you're going to be around me, here's a mask for you. I love it. Let people know about free tests from government. Testing even after vaccination. So really paying attention to those breakthrough infections. That's a good one. Let people know that events are mask friendly. I like that because there's sort of a stigma around people who wear masks, right? Like, I'm in Texas, so we're not even going to go there, but we get funny looks for wearing a mask. Also provide COVID home tests to the public. Test weekly, even if you are vaccinated. Continue to not only encourage boosters, but getting second doses of the vaccines too. Reminder for missed dose. That's a good one. Asking for all persons at family gatherings to be tested before attending to show care for others. Very good. I like that, Miss Cynthia. Getting children vaccinated. I have a 3-year-old, so I'm ready for Moderna to kick us into gear so we can get her going. Encourage children vaccination. Absolutely. Okay, in the interest of time, I'm going to move us on, I think, to our last question. That's okay. But please continue to comment in the chat. What are your recommendations for ensuring a culturally responsive microsite that is also linguistically appropriate and lay friendly? So how are we, you know, as NMQF going to be representative of the cultures that we intend to prioritize with this information? Just as a reminder, your candor is welcome, so don't be shy. Make sure your population understands the message using their own language or cultural values, absolutely. And also the microsite and the subsequent materials will be translated into Spanish. That's something that I forgot to mention earlier. Make sure that patients and individuals from the communities we want to reach are part of the development, absolutely, of the site and all parts of the process, absolutely. Use plain language and appropriate reading level. Make sure website is accessible for people with disabilities. That is vitally important. Thank you for noting that. Break the information down so the average person understands. Limit use of medical terms as laypersons do not understand. Use peer groups to develop the messages on the sites. Provide information on gender and cultural friendly. Gender affirming frameworks are vitally important in this whole discussion, I think, when we talk about how women and men are able to navigate healthcare systems differently. So that's a good point. We're going to keep that one in mind. Pictures or vignettes of real everyday people that I can relate to in my community. Day-to-day life, include all races. Consider other languages, not just Spanish. Yes, thank you. Video pictures, that look like the different types of targeted audience. Increase education of primary care doc. Absolutely. So this microsite, so with our quality improvement in clinical education, all that we do at SHC, the microsites will also be used for clinical education as well. And I think Laura Lee touched on that in her introduction. But one of the main things that we seek to do when we do quality improvement projects is not just through a lens of health equity, but really, really teaching what that means in practice. Like, how do I take all of these frameworks and models and concepts and all this data and put it into practice, into the health system, into my clinic, and how I interact with my patients. Outreach efforts, including meeting people where they are, COVID education so folks can make informed choices. What's your why? That's a good one. Sharing lived experiences. Please remember the physically disabled. Yes. Yes, ma'am, we will. Any more thoughts before we move on to the Q&A portion? Using captions. Got it. Thank you, Ms. Cynthia. Okay. Oh, wait. Blind people yes, the physically disabled is what I was going to bring up. Blind people need their own ways to outreach. Absolutely. Outreach efforts with doctors that are vaccine hesitant. That's an interesting point. Thank you. Okay. I think we're at a stopping point and we can start with Q&A. So I wanted to go back to the question, or not really question, but comment that I wanted Dr. Norman to address about really, you know, being a long hauler and having chronic kidney disease. Dr. Norman, are there any specifics that you've noticed or have you seen this at all happen in your practice?
Sure. So I think, so it's a great question because I think it again kind of highlights the importance of vaccination. So one thing people may know that COVID can attack a lot of parts of your body, including directly attacking the kidney. And so you can get direct kidney damage from COVID. And so in folks with long haul COVID, there appears to be either persistence of virus or at least persistence of the inflammation that the virus causes in the kidney. And so some folks who have long haul COVID may be at risk for some progressive kidney damage because from that infection. And so I think because it's a little unpredictable, it really just highlights why we really have to do our best to prevent infection in the first place.
Thank you so much for that, Dr. Norman. And then before I move to the questions in the Q&A, Dr. Biasolo, the outreach efforts with doctors that are vaccine hesitant comment, that was very interesting to me. Have you seen this? Can you talk more about it? Because I didn't know there were so many physicians that were may have been vaccine hesitant.
Unfortunately, as with, you know, many parts of our population groups, we do see some healthcare providers that are vaccine hesitant, have concerns or questions about vaccines. Luckily, they're in the minority, but it's so important because they have such influence over patients who come to them. And so we have to be proactive in educating all providers. This pandemic has been a little different. It's been a little challenging in providing education. Typically, we meet at conferences as doctors. We have time to read journals. We have time to go to conferences where we learn from one another. With the pandemic, we're all learning at the same time on social media, in the news, et cetera. So doctors then have to pull back, take a look at the research themselves, learn sometimes on their own. They don't have that same peer-to-peer interaction. So that's something on us to educate our colleagues and ourselves to make sure we have the right information to impart to our communities.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And thank you, Laura Lee, for reminding me of the earlier question. Do you think historical environmental traumas or harms in communities of color, particularly in African Americans, impacts in increase in health issues and diseases? There's a lot of distrust due to past experience. So what are some of the best ways to engage people in building trust and vaccine confidence? And panelists, any one of you can answer, I think.
So I will add my two cents. So I think that's absolutely an issue. I think that, you know, and I think it's beyond talking about some of the big things like Tuskegee that people hear about. I think in my experience, you know, patients respond to their healthcare experience. And so I think it's well documented the differences in care that people get in emergency rooms, in the hospital, at primary care physicians' offices, the belief or disbelief of people's symptoms, of people's pain, how they're treated. And I think when people haven't been treated well, feel like they haven't been treated well, you're not going to be encouraged to go back to that system, you know, when a new treatment or therapy comes out. And so I think this is why it's really important, you know, that that we reach out, as someone said in the chat, meet people where they are, build that trust. It has to also not be transactional. So we can't just go into the community when we need something, we want something, we want to do research, so forth. We really have to show people that we are there for them, for their health over the long term, slowly build that trust so that when we say, hey, I think you should consider getting this vaccine, you know, they, you know, may say, you know, I'm not really sure about this, you know, but I trust Dr. Norman, so I'm going to go with it, kind of thing.
I agree. I'll make a comment in there too, my two cents. So, you know, trust is a very, very valuable but delicate thing, because when this virus all hit, it was not received well because of all the information was coming out. They would say one thing one day and then come back the next day and say something different. And so the entire population of society has been under a mistrust right from the beginning, if I could say that. And it's now a catch-up for those of us in healthcare to be able to help dismiss those and give them the truth that we feel is right now, factual. So that's become a difficult problem. And I, being a nurse, am usually the one that's trusted in the healthcare system for persons believing what I say is going to be considered and helpful, and education is going to be on their level, and all things that I say is going to be something that they actually trust me for. But when this first came out, I flipped both of my hats, both as a patient as well as a nurse, like, okay, what is really going on? And why are we as the public, all of us are in the same boat together, not getting the facts that we should? And then at the end, when you make this vaccine quickly, as we were already under a leadership that was a lot of doubt and falsehoods, if I could say that, then you make this vaccine quickly, and then people are again, why should I take this? You know, where were you when they were saying like China was actually wearing masks and we weren't? Where is it that, you know, we have a leader that's telling us that don't worry, it's not going to, you know, affect us, and yet here we are dying, especially those of the minorities? And so it's difficult that when the public actually sees such horrendous distrust, for us then to come back and say, okay, we're here. This vaccine is going to protect you. We have to take this because this is the only thing we have. This is, again, our ammunition in order for us to fight in this army. If our army doesn't have the right ammunition, we're going to lose the battle. So we have to continue in our care, in our work as healthcare providers, to try to dispel all the myths and the distrust and try to gain their trust again. But again, like Dr. Norma said, when it's the providers that the persons have been going to trust them with their health care of other things over the years, then that's the one that they're going to go back to. And whatever that doctor or provider says, that's the ones that they're trusting. So we try to share that with other organizations. What organization was helping you before that is now giving you that same kind of information now to say this is a benefit for you? And we should then be looked at as, like in the National Kidney Foundation of Michigan, to be looked at as though we're a trusted messenger to the need and the for the vaccines and the boosters to help us.
Great, and I'm so glad Dr. Norman and Ms. Cynthia touched on this, and hopefully I can answer the last question in Q&A together with your question, Kristen, about the impact of low health literacy as on the uptake of vaccines. And I mean, just from the onset of this pandemic, it has just shed light on the fact that we have not been doing a good job as healthcare professionals in terms of health literacy and providing information at a level that patients can understand. It just shone light on the fact of how many Americans just did not understand and still do not understand how vaccines actually work, what they do in your body, just the mechanisms. And it is on all of us to really try now to get to a point where people understand the bodies more, what it means to have diabetes, what it means to have kidney disease, how does that impact your day-to-day life? And then how we can use a tool such as vaccines to help improve your protection against diseases that may come up. So it is imperative that we really focus, like the caller said, on health literacy and making sure that we address that.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, Native American in the chat, we are also experiencing mistrust, hesitancy, and doubt at the beginning of the pandemic. One of the things that our partners have told us, especially Dr. Stephen Thomas, who we've worked with to expand our Hair Wellness Warriors project, is that, you know, we just can't erase that 4 years of just nonsense coming out of our leadership. So we really have to be engaged with community leaders and working really hard. One last question before we wrap. We are working on addressing mis and disinformation and working with some providers on how to build vaccine confidence and talking to their patients. Do you utilize motivational interviewing techniques with patients? That's a good question. Dr. Bisolo or Dr. Norman, do you want to answer?
So, not specifically, but you know, that's a great point. I think, you know, one of the things we do with our patients really is just try to hear what their concerns are, let them kind of talk it out, let them talk about what they understand about the risk, about the vaccine, and figure out where their concerns are coming from. And then I think, you know, in a non-confrontational way, trying to give the correct information and encouragement. And I think the other thing is that it's a long-term thing. So just because I have that visit with my patient today and they don't decide to get the vaccine, it's not really a failure, but I think it's, you know, it's just a step towards, you know, building that relationship to move them, to let them decide to be, you know, to protect themselves.
Absolutely. And Dr. Lorelei Hall mentioned in the chat that our DRIVE program for quality improvement does promote this as motivational interviewing as patient-centered communication. So thank you for that, Dr. Norman. And thank you all for your participation in this webinar. We hope to refine and reform this going forward for each month and each, you know, condition and health issue that we're talking about at the total intersection of vaccination. So thank you so much and have a wonderful weekend.